Just a little comment on this passage from Luke. He's sort of twisting things. I mean, there's no place in the whole Hebrew scripture that says the Messiah was supposed to suffer. But Luke kind of manages the data in order to fulfill his great plan of promise and fulfillment in Jesus. Okay. When I was in the seminary, we were pretty much closed off from the world. No newspapers, no magazines, much less radio or television. And so, in this kind of claustrophobic environment, that we entertained ourselves in a very modest way from a repertoire of clerical anecdotes, most of which were pretty banal and eminently forgettable. But there's one that I've not forgotten. Supposedly, and this may be apocryphal, but the message is still eminently applicable, I think. There was a seminary being built, and they had to submit the plans to Rome, of course. So they went to see this bureaucrat in the Vatican, and he looked at the plan, and he looked up and said, has to do it in Latin, of course, Sunt ne angeli? Are they angels? What he was referring to is that they not put toilets in the seminary. The point being that we still suffer, I think, from a heresy which has not been very much addressed, and even in the renewal of the Second Vatican Council has not been talked about very much, called angelism. What does angelism mean? That immaterial reality is more important and more real than physical reality. And we're haunted by this, even to this day, I think. The Pope just canonized 5 more people. Sister this, father this, sister this, sister this. In other words, people who are celibate and dedicated to a non-physical kind of existence. Why do I bring this up? Because the resurrection is the resurrection of the body. The Jews didn't have any notion of soul. That was a Platonic import. So if God was going to restore life to this man Jesus, he had to be a body person. He had to be a body person. And this I don't think that we really pay much attention to, because we still talk about saving our souls and the spiritual life. Spiritual meaning immaterial life rather than spiritual as the Jews understood it. It meant God-breathed life. And we continue to, I think, miss the point. I mean, we talk about ourselves as a sacramental church, you know, and the sacraments are very tactile, very physical. And we've somehow abstracted this to the point where the Eucharist, for instance, the heart and soul of the Christian life, as the Vatican Council put it, doesn't look like bread, doesn't taste like bread, doesn't feel like bread. But we're supposed to make this kind of mental transformation to say, well, this is really a meal and this is really bread. The implications of this, I think, are very far-reaching. When I was growing up, the body was seen as this great well of temptation, this voracious evil spirit that's going to suck you in and deform your life. And therefore, and this is not an exaggeration, many of us grew up worrying and fearing that we even had bodies. And yet, look at it. If God made us human beings, and it was not a mistake to give us bodies and give us senses, why are senses important? Because they are the absolute essence of our materiality, our physicality. They are the way the world comes to us and we come to the world. And somehow we volatilize, spiritualize in the Greek rather than the Hebrew sense, this whole process. If God raised Jesus, then it was a resurrection of the body. And therefore, instead of seeing the body as this great threatening monster that's going to devour us and turn us into reprobate sinners, then we have to revisit this. The census, for example, or rehabilitation of the census. Yeah, there's certain ambiguity in our sensorium, but its primary direction is to God and to goodness, to the presence of God in the world. If God is present to us in any way, it is, first of all, through our senses, as Aquinas said. What we see. What is beautiful. What we hear. Which is elevating in the best, or deepening. And smell, and taste. I mean, if you look at the whole sacramental system, they're all immersed in physicality, in materiality. But I'd like to suggest that the most important of the senses is touch. Why? Because touch, as opposed to the other senses, really does put me in contact with the world and with, above all, another human being. See, we were always taught in the seminary and prior to that that touch was dangerous. And so the world became a fearful place, a dangerous place, not a God-filled place, but a place which menaced and threatened our purity, our spiritual purity. Spiritual, again, in the Platonic sense of souls. And yet, if you look at the career of Jesus, Jesus touched those little kids when they brought him. Jesus touched the daughter of Jairus when he gave her life. It's unimaginable to me that Jesus went through life keeping custody of the eyes, as was so important, so that you walked around the seminary ground only looking at the dirt, lest you see something that tempt you and distort you. So, what is the point of this? We need, I think, an enormous rehabilitation of our religious imaginations. The touch is divinizing. You see, even here too, we see that the pernicious influence of this Platonizing of the Christian message. Augustine, God love him, was a genius and a wonderful human being and a great saint, but he was a Platonist. So he would say that even a loving couple, married, fully legitimate, going to bed together, would be at least venially sinful. There's something pernicious and distortive about that way of looking at the world, at looking at myself. Does this have any resonance for the resurrection? Yeah, it does. It seems to me it has enormous resonance for the resurrection. That I can be at home in the world, safely at home in the world. Like, what's heaven going to be? All us spirits floating around. No! It's going to be a repertoire of the smell of fresh bread or laundry newly hung out in the wind to dry. Of beautiful faces. Of the taste of a good wine or a single malt scotch. Of all sorts of wonderful things. The whole repertoire of our past. I don't know. Paul was asked, well, what's a resurrected body like? And he thumps around and finally throws it. Ah, who knows the glory of the God, goodness of God, what God's going to do. But it cannot be a radical divorce from our material lives. Our human lives. You see? How much of church life, even to this day, is dehumanized. Years and years ago, the great Maritain wrote a book called True Humanism. And Michael Novak, who's since become one of the reddest of the rednecks, said in his earlier days, our task is not to Christianize humanity, it is to humanize Christianity. And I'd like to propose that's still the agenda. This is obviously not a call for licentiousness or some kind of evil extravagance. It's rather a call for us to feel comfortable in our own physical reality and this God-given world, with our God-given senses whereby we touch that world and are touched by that world.